You can follow the comment. I was there. So good evening, everyone, and welcome to the final meeting of 2023 of the Yolo County Transportation District. We call ourselves Yolo Transportation District now, and it's now 6 o'clock. So this is Monday, December 11th, 2023. We have a couple items on our agenda before we go to closed session. The first is recognizing that we have almost a complete board expecting Dr. Dante Curley from West Sacramento shortly. Otherwise, everyone is present, and we now have to take a motion to approve the agenda for December 11th. Is there such a motion?
Move to approve the agenda this month.
Okay. A motion is second to approve the decision. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We are now going to close session with conference on legal counsel regarding significant exposure to litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9.
D2. Mr. Chair, I think we were supposed to take public comment on items not on the agenda. So we did discuss that.
Sure.
It's up to you whether you want to take the comments, public comments first, or do you want to open it up to public comments as to the closed session?
Yeah, now, and
is there any public comments at all for the closed session? That's where I was going.
My only comment is you would actually need to discuss a possible environmental litigation involving the environmental impact statement. April Autumn said at the forum on Thursday night that, quote, I can't defend Caltrans calculations on the induced demand. If our staff can't defend in public, then why are we hiring a lawyer to defend Caltrans calculations? That's probably going to be one of the biggest contention of this thing. Barb wrote a letter about the Caltrans DAR and found that Caltrans understated induced demand by 15 times. I think the same thing is a problem here.
I'm just
concerned that basically if the staff can't defend the EIR, why are we paying, why is Yolo Transportation District going to hire a lawyer to defend Caltrans calculations? Thank you very much.
And thank you, Alan. All right. Any additional public comment on our closed session? If there's not, we'll now expect to be gone maybe 20 minutes or so to have this conversation, but we don't know. But we'll be back soon, okay?
Okay. So just to clarify, when we return is when we'll take public comment on the non-agenda.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
That'd be more proximate to the additions we're doing.
So we need to get
are you doing?
Oh, you might be.
I thought we all were talking.
All right. We are back, and we have no reportable action from our closed session this evening. We will return to our agenda and begin with public comment relative to the consent calendar that by 5A through 5G. We've already covered anything not related to the agenda, so now we're on the consent calendar. Let me start with my own colleagues. Colleagues, do you have any item you wish to take off of the consent calendar for intended discussion or modification? We do have one issue on our calendar. We're scheduled to have a meeting in November 11th of 2024. That is Veterans Day, a federal holiday. So we're going to cancel them the following week, November 18th, as an alternative date. So with that correction, we are now considering the consent calendar. Any comments from the board? Seeing none, any member of the public wish to comment on the consent calendar? There being none, is there a motion? Moved and seconded to adopt the consent calendar with the date correction for the calendar. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. And that takes us to our regular calendar. And item 7 is the Yolo 80 draft environmental document. And I believe Brian's going to weigh in.
Yes, I will just say a few opening remarks, and then I'll hand it over to Brian, and also we're going to be hearing from Caltrans as well with this agenda item. So, Mr. Chair, as we have reached a critical point in this project where we do have an EIR, and we will be talking about some of the feedback that we have received. We'll be hearing an overview of the EIR from Caltrans. We'll share some of the feedback that we have received to date from members of the public. And then we do have a staff recommendation in terms of expressing a preference for one of the alternatives that is identified through the EIR. And so with that, I will turn it over to Brian.
Thank you, Autumn. She took some of my opening remarks, so I'm going to do a little bit of a repeat, but that can work for the time. So good evening, Chair Stoller, members of the board. I mentioned the item before you relates to the Yolo 80 Management Project draft environmental document, which in this case is environmental impact report. Before we get started, I'd like to recognize Caltrans District 3 project delivery team, including Detesh Patel, who's engineer and project manager for Caltrans District 3, and Deputy Director Greg DeLong. We also have Jeff Mazzaleno and Lauren Stafford from our WSD consulting team here available here for as a resource for any part of this conversation that we might need them, and they're participating remotely via Zoom. And finally, we have Kurt Trost, who's our legal counsel for the project, and he can speak to any people or other project legal issues. So, next slide, please, Heather. Now, if you recall, the draft environmental document was released on the same day as the November board meeting, which required, scheduling a full board discussion for this week. With that, we have several important topics to discuss with you conjointly with Caltrans District 3. So looking at the slide topics, Caltrans, as the Yolo 80 CEQA lead agency, will review the DEIR findings and the VMC mitigation plan. Yolo TD will then share our justification for favoring one of the DEIR alternatives. And we will also share with you the results from our online survey, for which we've received up to over 1,500 responses as of today. And then we'll explain critical path timelines between today and the spring. And then we'll return to the board for discussion and consideration of the staff recommendations. At this point, I'll turn it over to Gritesh to share with us the findings of the EIR.
Welcome, by the way. We're glad to have you here this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you. Nice to be here. Thanks for the kind words to Ryan and the introduction, and good evening to the chair and to the board members. My name is Kirtan Patel. I'm the project manager, as Autumn and Brian introduced me, at Caltrans District 3 for the Yellow 80 Managed Lanes project. We can go to the next slide. So as Brian mentioned, the draft Environmental Impact Report, was released on November 13th for a minimum 45-day review period for the public, for public comments. But we actually provided 54 days to account for the holidays, with a final day to for public comments, to receive public comments, January 5th, 2024. So we'll be just going through a little bit of project description, the alternatives that are available in the draft EIR, some findings as they are related to environmental impact, and ultimately the BMT mitigation plan. And the project description there, you can see, is the project would add a managed lane on I-80 and US 50 by combination of lane conversion, restriping, and shoulder and median reconstruction with a concrete barrier. Next slide, please. So these are the alternatives. You'll actually find in the draft EIR that there are a total of 13, but they are broken out a little differently. So right now we're only showing 2 through 7. So we're showing 6 of them here. And I'm going to try to explain a little bit of what there might be a little confusion if anyone is reading it and saying, well, why are there 13? What does a no build mean? So, alternative 1 in the draft EIR, which is not listed on the screen there, is essentially, it's called a no build, which is always included in every draft environmental document that Caltrans puts out. It does nothing. It's continuing the existing situation. It's just a requirement that we include in our environmental document. So alternatives 2A through 7A that you see on the screen there, they each have an associated B alternative, which means 2B through 7B are the exact same as 2A through 7A, with the only difference being the B alternative have what's called a direct connector, which I'm going to describe that and show you a little bit of a pictorial representation in a couple of slides. That is essentially a separated structure that will connect the managed lane from at the I-80 and US 50 interchange going eastbound and westbound. And hopefully the pictorial representation will bring that to life a little bit more. But alternative 2A is a high occupancy vehicle lane, HOV 2+, HOV also known as carpool lane. That's what we have all throughout the Sacramento region. The Diamond Lane, you'll see that on US 50, I-80, going to Clatter County, Sacramento County, Yolo County. Alternative 3A, high occupancy toll, or HOT, 2+, essentially just a toll lane. So it would be adding 1 toll lane with occupancy requirements that would require 2 passengers or more to utilize the lane free. Any vehicle with less than 2 occupants would have to pay the toll to utilize the lane. Alternative 4A is the high occupancy toll 3+, the HOT 3+, which is the same exact toll lane as alternative 3A for the HOT 2+. However, the occupancy requirements are increased to have 3 occupants in the vehicle to utilize the lane or the toll lane for free. Any vehicle less than 3 occupants would have to pay the toll to utilize the lane. Alternative 5A is an express lane, which you'll see if anyone's driven out into the Bay Area on 680, 880, I believe they've included some express lanes now. That is a toll lane where everyone pays, regardless of occupancy requirements. If you want to do 3-4 people, you have to pay the toll. Alternative 6A is the transit. Thank you. Alternative 6A is the transit-only lane, which would be a lane dedicated to buses only. And alternative 7A is general-purpose lane conversion to HOV 2+, meaning the existing configuration of the lane would remain the same, but the number 1 lane would be repurposed to an HOV 2+. So rather than right now the existing facility is 3 lanes in each direction, alternative 2A through 6A would be adding a lane to make it 4. Alternative 7 would remain the same amount of lanes, would be 3 lanes, with the number one. That I know I'm getting a little confusing now with the numbering. Number one lane would be converted from general purpose, which is this heavy mixed flow lane, into HOV 2+. Next slide, please. So we wanted to kind of give a little visual representation of what these alternatives look like. So alternative one you'll see at the top is the no build, keeping the existing condition. And this is what we currently see out on the facility throughout the project limit. It's just three general purpose lanes in each direction. The middle picture is alternatives 2 through 6. And this is the same for A and B. 2A through 6A, 2B through 6B. This would construct a managed lane or add a managed lane in the median, which would increase the number of lanes from 3 to 4 in each direction. Alternative 7 would, in the bottom picture there, would repurpose the number one lane to a managed lane, which, as I was describing before, keeps the same number of lanes as the existing facility, but the number one lane would be converted from the general purpose to a managed lane. Next slide, please. Oh, no, you can see that. It's like my blue. So this is kind of the visual rendering that we wanted to show for the what the direct connector actually is, what it looks like. You can see kind of going through it again before. Or a little more. Perfect. So on the left, exactly. On the left, you'll see the existing condition as it is. This is at the I-80 and US 50 interchange. This is facing westbound towards Davis. And on the right, you'll see a rendering of what the managed lane direct connector would look like. So essentially, if you're coming eastbound from Davis towards Sacramento, that managed lane direct connector would, if you're in the number one lane, in the managed lane, let's say it's a toll lane. If you're in the toll lane, rather than weaving back over into the number 3 or 4 lane to get on the I-80 over the top connecting ramp, you would remain in the number one managed lane in the toll lane in your own structure ramp that would take you onto I-80 eastbound and to continue in the toll lane. So the purpose of that is to maintain operational benefits, reduce any weaving action by going anyone trying to stay in the toll lane, get over the last second to get over to the existing I-80 connector ramp. There could be some safety issues with that. So there's operational and safety benefits from this direct connector. That was next slide. So these are some of the draft EIR findings from an environmental perspective. I'm not going to go through each one, but some of the highlights are that we wanted to point out were in regards to air quality, which you'll see the finding was less than significant in the draft EIR. Greenhouse gas emissions, less than significant or less than significant with mitigation, and that's dependent on the alternative. That each alternative had sometimes had a different finding, a different sequence impact. And population and housing was no impact or less than a significant impact. The one finding that did require some mitigation from the project was transportation related. And that was the finding from the CEQA impact was significant and unavoidable. And you'll see the double asterisk there with a note that it's significant and unavoidable for alternatives 2 through 5, but 6 and 7 were considered a lesser level of impact. So what we did to, well, here's the actual finding from that the significant impact to transportation and to the vehicle miles traveled that would be induced into the corridor and will increase due to the project, due to the addition of a managed lane. This table is essentially, the numbers are basically the same, but the first two columns there, or columns 2 and 3, are just daily numbers. The last two columns, 4 and 5, are annual numbers. really those numbers that we were focusing on is those very last column, and we're focusing on alternatives 2 through 5. So you'll see that it's 128 million annual vehicle miles traveled that are induced into the corridor due to the project. That's what, and there's a footnote at the bottom that alternatives 2B through 5B, which again are the exact same as A, 2A through 5A, just including that direct connector. That has an annual induced BNC of 133 million. So that's the range that we're looking to mitigate for, 128 to 133 million on an annual basis. Next slide. So, to comply with CEQA regulations, we have to try to mitigate for that 128 to 133 million annual VNC induced into the project. And so we came up with a VNC mitigation plan. This is proposed. This is in the draft EIR currently. Some of the details are currently under discussion with a lot of the partner agencies, with these local agencies that implement these measures and implement these projects, ultimately to come to a complete resolution with those partner agencies by the time we get the final EIR. As we're in the draft stage currently, this is the proposed plan. So the first program there you'll see is the voluntary trip reduction program in Yolo County, which is run by Yolo Commute. And the annual VNC reduced is just under 25 million. So it's a pretty substantial amount there. And the cost to implement it is about $4 million on an annual basis. So the proposed amount of contribution from the project towards this program would be $10 million over a 20-year period. And that's that second to last column from the right there. We'll get to it at the end, but overall for the VNC mitigation plan, what the Yolo 80 Managed Lanes project is proposing is to provide a total of $55 million in capital, construction capital costs towards VNC mitigation. So, and so that's what the project ultimately adds up to in terms of the dollar contribution amount. So that's $55 million, and we'll get to the end to see how much of the VNC will be reduced. The second project here is expanding the capital corridor frequency between Oakland and Sacramento, and that would reduce the VNC by $12.6 million on an annual basis. Then we have the microtransit. The microtransit in Yolo County, which is operated and implemented by Yolo County and by Yolo Bus, City of Davis. And so then we'll be in... Apologies. There's too many of you coming around in my head. So the annual VNC reduce is just over $6 million there. The next one, subsidizing monthly transit passes in Yolo County. We've had conversations with YPD, with Yolo TV on this, for how to implement this and how this can be utilized and provided to the members of the public. And we wanted to make sure that there's no overlap in some of the VNC reduction that's claimed from this measure versus the voluntary trip reduction program, which could potentially include the same. So those conversations are happening. That's part of the analysis that the double counting will not happen. So this is its own separate entity. It's its own separate program. So it gets about $5.6 million of annual VNC reduced. Similar with the reducing of transit there for Yolo Bus and Capital Corridor users in Yolo County, just under $4 million annual VNC reduced. And then expanding the Causeway Connection, Route 138, just above $3 million annual VNC reduced. And finally, the last two proposed are expanding Unitrans in the City of Davis, which is operated by UC Davis and the City of Davis, and building, helping fund the building of an overcrossing at the future DC student housing development site in Davis, which would connect this future development with forced access for students, which is basically funding students to get to this campus. So this gives us a total annual VMT reduction of just over 57 million, which is 43% of the induced VMT. That amount is about 133 million annual VMT that was mentioned earlier as the total induced into the corridor. So we would be able to mitigate for 57 million of that using that $55 million project contribution. Yeah. Next slide, please. So we wanted to talk a little bit about some operational effects and benefits and the projected revenue. All of the data here in terms of congestion relief in the third column and the revenue in the fourth and fifth column are based on the horizon year, which is 2049. So way out in the future for the project, this is what the analysis was based on. So again, alternatives 2A to the 7A, as were described earlier, and you can see the number of time savings for each alternative, and the highest number of time savings is alternative 4A, which is the hot, the toll lane with a 3+ occupancy requirement. It gives you about 69 minutes of time savings to travel through the corridor, and the gross revenue, about 20.5 million. Net revenue estimate is 9.6 million. And the net revenue is all the revenue that is any excess after operating and maintenance costs are taken into account for the facility. Next slide. And I think that's it for me. I'll pass it back to Brian.
Thank you, Vincent. So from a CEQA D&T standpoint, alternatives, two through five didn't really have much of a difference, right, from the D&T standpoint. But they do have operational differences between each other. And so that's why we're interested in sharing with you in this next slide of, what staff's preferences and why we support that preference. So, as you'll find in your recommendations, the staff does favor an alternative. It's one that we've been in discussion with Caltrans for some time now, and we've been going out into the community and discussing with them, in the context of all of the different alternatives. So what the HOT3+ lane can do relative to some of the other alternatives like the no-build or the transit-only lane, it will have an improved effect on traffic flow for all of the lanes, because you'll have one lane flowing smoothly, which is beneficial for all the other lanes. It also prioritizes higher occupancy vehicles and moves more people. That is, you get more people throughput versus vehicular throughput, which a general purpose lane would focus on. It does provide also an option for all drivers to avoid congestion when their value of travel time is high. I know there's a lot of discussion that occurs about who benefits and who doesn't benefit from hot lanes, but the research and the literature is pretty clear that that all users do tend to use them when they need to, and very few people use them regularly. One major aspects of this alternative is that it will help provide funding for alternative travel options on the corridor, such as those mentioned in the VMT mitigation plan. In other words, the funding would be a sort of continuing source of funds once the initial investment from the capital project to get those projects started is exhausted. We'll also help fund equity in VMT mitigation program. So there's some overlap between the two. But the project will need to develop an equity plan, and that equity plan may include projects that don't directly serve the core, Dyke 80 corridor itself, but communities adjacent to the corridor. pain in the butt. And we believe that the HOC3 plus plan is more consistent with the December 21 project goals approved by board. So I mentioned earlier we have an online survey. It's been out since the draft environmental document was released. And keep in mind, this is a scientific survey. It's simply an open community survey, so people will self-select into it. A little bit of background is that leading up to the first EIR meeting in West Sacramento, we had maybe about 70 responses, and then after the media coverage from the EIR meeting in West Sacramento, we had a major spike and got about, jumped up to probably 100, 900 responses the next day. So the media coverage definitely raised awareness about the project, raised the profile, and a lot of survey responses as a result. So what this slide shows you really is for what the proportion of survey responses, where they came from. And we ask people where they live, where they work, and if they live and work in the same place. Majority of the respondents came from communities east of Yolo County. We're talking about the Sacramento region. So just keep that in mind when you see the results. I will say, though, that when you filter for any individual community, the results don't really change all that much. So take that for what it's worth. The second highest responses came from the city of Davis, which is understandable, and then I believe followed by Woodland. So, one of the first questions we asked next day was how people actually use, and just to back up, we tried to ask questions that we felt like this board would want the answers to help with decision making process, not it's going to help with where we are in the process right now. So one of those questions that we asked them was, how they use Interstate 80 as a traveler. And the vast majority of people either occasionally or regularly use Interstate 80, and rarely use other modes of transportation on Interstate 80. So the vast majority of respondents here are people who are driving on the freeway. Next slide, please. So we also asked them what they felt like the biggest issues were on the highway in Yolo County. And what I've done here is I've put little gray boxes around, the responses that correspond to some level of a problem. And you can see that 93% of the respondents felt like there was too much traffic, 82% that driving conditions were unsafe, 73% felt like there wasn't enough public transportation on the corridor, 56% felt like there was insufficient safe bicycling facilities, and then a majority also felt like there was too much residential cut-through traffic as a result of the congestion on the freeway. Next slide, Heather, please. And so then, we shared with them that any new lane would have some usage rules associated with it. In other words, we didn't ask them if they were interested in a general purpose lane. We needed to get that response from them anyway. But what we wanted to get was their, level of, support for different rules and regulations on the new lane. So, what you can see here is that the highest level of support was actually for a carpool lane, typical 2-plus carpool lane, which would theorize that it's something that people are familiar with and would be willing to accept. There's lower level of support for a lot of the other alternatives, including the 3-plus hot lane, a carpool lane requiring 3 or more occupants have a half the support of those requiring just 2 or more occupants. And then as you go down towards, express lane, converting existing fast lane to carpool lane, and the least favorite of all is the charging toll for everybody on the Causeway Bridge. So not a whole lot of support from these survey respondents for the managed lane options, but we know that from a transportation planning standpoint that the general purpose lane is not the best way to manage the highway. We also asked them some design and operational questions just because we felt like that would be useful for us as we're going through our concept of operations. Again, you have a lot of no's here, but it isn't clear if it's because you don't, if they don't support the individual option, or if it's because they don't support tolling in general. So results from this question might not be as useful as they otherwise would be if we had selected from those who supported the management option. Next slide, please. And of course, we were very upfront about the fact that toll managed lanes would generate revenue and that there are ways that we would propose to be spending that funding. And what I did here was I highlighted in those gray boxes the alternative or the options, which approach 50% or exceeded 50%. And so there's considerably more support, for example, enhancing public bus service along Site 80 than some of the other options. Making public transportation and capital corridor, right, is kind of truncated here, but it's making it more affordable. That had lots of support. So considerable support for reducing the cost of traveling by public transportation on the 80 corridor. And then also receiving majority support with offering programs that promote meeting alternatives. Kind of in line with the fact that the biggest challenges that we have do tend to be during commute times, notwithstanding the weekend surges that we see. Okay, do you want to take a break there and answer any questions, or do you want to just kind of continue through the timeline and
We'll take advantage of that break, I think.
And it's just real quick. On the union point that you're unsure for those who didn't or should support the options of what you would, here it is. If full carpool lanes are built, do you support the following options? So that one could, and I have no idea how the data is configured. Could you just do a cross tab?
Yeah. We could filter out for those who supported the idea of managed lanes or toll managed lanes, and then reach out, get up to use it and use for that. Okay. That way you would know if they're the same, then you would know that it's
okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Shall we resume?
Please continue. All right. So that brings us to the timeline. And there's only one more slide after this. So this just kind of helps you understand the process as you move forward. And I think that the Autumn also has this slide, this exhibit in the next agenda item, but this kind of helps you understand what's occurring between now and March. So just looking at that, at the top row there in purple, that shows you how the sort of GPA and interagency governance conversations need to occur between now and January. That GPA does need to be formed in January to meet a lot of these milestones that we're in a very tight, compressed time frame for. The row in black there just sort of explains everything that's occurring kind of at the staff level behind the scenes. We need to have coordination with CGC staff on pre-application. That will be submitted to them this week. The formal application will be due later in January. There needs to be a hearing for approval for establishing tolling authority, and then in March is when the CCC would actually take action on that. I know that's not directly related to the EIR, but all of these things are intertwined with each other, and they all sort of need to occur in a specific sequence. Next slide, please. So, bringing back to recommendations, as you just know, I just received a presentation from both Caltrans and us on the sort of relationship between EIR and the project. The recommendation is also to receive public input, and then final recommendation is for the board to direct the OLT staff to submit a letter to Caltrans affirming alternative number 4 as our preferred alternative for the OLT maintenance project. So I will stop there and happy to answer any questions. Oh wait, there's one more. Sorry. One more. And then thinking, looking ahead in January, all those BMC mitigation projects that Gert has referenced, we will, for those that implicate your TDs, we'll be looking for the board to approve the commitment for those mitigation projects. And then in February, also referenced, I believe, by Autumn or Kirk earlier, is the FHWA term sheet, which would is sort of the agreement between FHWA and your OTD for to access the infra funds that we have. I will leave it there.
Could we see the prior slide for a moment, please? Very fast. You know, that Caltrans affirming alternative forehead is our preferred alternative. I just wanted to make sure. As that's a recommendation, is this an action we're going to be taking today, or is that an action we take at a future meeting?
So the action to recommend to Caltrans the preferred alternative would be today.
All right. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure there was an action. All right. Well, we have received the presentation. Keep us away from it.
Okay.
All right, we've done the first two. The third item is the letter regarding our preferred alternative. We can go to public comment before we go to board comment, if that's agreeable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then it's time for public comment. Welcome our publisher, share their views, Alan Hirsch. You have 3 minutes, my friend.
Thank you. I have about 15 comments here. First place, how can you improve when you haven't been perfected? You haven't made the public interest to correct yet. This is an unpeer-reviewed document. The numbers and calculations are not been affirmed and visited from other experts. You can't make a decision based on time because you don't have the final numbers. It's like making a medical decision on an unpeer-reviewed drug test that hasn't been confirmed. There's been no adequate public input. You made the decision before you got all the public input. Copies of the EIR were not at the public library in Davis in West Sacramento until 3 days ago. Excuse me, until last Wednesday, I believe. You obtain a copy of the EIR on the internet, you need to download 26 different documents, and then request an additional document. So how the survey could be based on any data, which is not available on the website, is nothing. So the survey is just a beauty contract. It doesn't really reflect the EIR. And the implication that this is real impact, the input for the EIR substance is not true. The HOV 3 plus favors child travelers over workers in Davis. And Caltrans CMCP study states that there was almost no influence on travel behavior by making the HOV lane. So this was not improved that throughput. The same people who were doing 3 cars would be still in 3 cars. No one would make the change if it was trivial. That's Caltrans' own number on the CMCP for IACP. So this is ugly. I don't believe this will fix custom traffic significantly. It will come back again with the decongestion with induced demand. It does not fix custom traffic. You guys will all be gone to your next job, but this is what's going to happen. The mitigation basically is effectively giving up on zero carbon for Davis and Lowell County. If this project was not reviewed, the project is focused on using the INVAR and the EIR for conformity with the local plan. It was not reviewed with the climate plan. I think that's a substantive mistake that you have to reject the draft EIR as a result of that. The pool policy, you haven't proven out that phase one will be mitigated. You haven't reviewed the entire project. It is unclear whether phase two, phase three, or how many other phases of IR will ever be funded. So I think you need to prove out that phase one is being mitigated. I'm not sure it has been. Lessened impact on housing. Adding a freeway won't change housing patterns and land use patterns. Does that make any sense? We know freeways are sprawl inducing. Widening your freeway, making people drive here. Well, obviously, it makes sprawl inducing. That's lots of literature on that. This is not a substantial design. That's not a substantial finding. Please. This is just not ready for you should not make the decision tonight, particularly because you told the public they had input until January 5th, and you're making the decision prematurely tonight. Please do not decide tonight. It is not good form. I also will note that this was on the calendar. This public hearing was supposed to begin at 7, but you began at 6:30. So people came in late. They didn't know. I don't think this is good form. I don't think it's good practice. We need to build trust in our government. It's so fragile. Our democracy is so fragile now. And this is not good practice, what you're doing now. This is not open. This is not really good practice. Please don't do this tonight. Please don't embarrass yourself. This is just not right. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Next speaker, anyone else wish to comment? Welcome.
Hi, my name is Stephen Wheeler. I'm a professor of urban planning and urban and regional planning at UC Davis. As you probably know, transportation is the single largest source of California's greenhouse gas emissions, and also the area in which we are making the least progress. Traffic keeps rising in large part because Caltrans keeps widening roads rather than considering other alternatives. If induced travel is taken into account, widening I-80 in Yolo County will add at least 79,000 tons of carbon dioxide emissions annually, equivalent to increasing Davis emissions by at least 14%, or unincorporated Yolo County emissions by at least 7.3%. I-80 widening will probably undo whatever benefits have resulted from climate action plans in Yolo County and the city of Davis over the past 15 years, including the formation of Valley Clean Energy. Thus, this is likely to be the most important environmental decision any of you make in your political lifetime. If you want to call yourselves environmental or climate leaders in the future, you can't support this project. And you need to take action now to bring about a better alternative. The first step would be to withhold YCTD's consent from the DEIR. There are many good reasons to do so, especially since Caltrans did a very poor job on the document. The first is that a good range of alternatives wasn't studied, including a multi-lane tolled facility as YCTD staff requested. A second is that Caltrans modeling ignores induced traffic and is thus utterly inadequate. A third is that proposed mitigations only cover 43% of the PMT increase. And a fourth is that the document falsely states that the project would have no impact on urban growth, air pollutants, and energy demand, and less than significant impacts on greenhouse gases and state climate policy. So at this meeting, instead of directing staff to submit a letter affirming alternative 4, please direct staff to develop a letter asking that the DEIR be improved and recirculated. Next year, you will also need to refuse to release funds YCD controls for the project. Yes, it's unfortunate to lose $86 million from the misguided application for managed lanes that your agency submitted previously. But better to lose that money than to pursue a bad project that greatly increases VMT and greenhouse gas emissions in violation of state and local policy. In contrast to spending up to $436 million to widen the freeway, a project simply pricing all existing lanes while constructing bus bypass lanes could make at least $300 million a year, money that could then be used for transit and affordable housing near jobs.
All right.
Finally, I need going to take 30 more seconds.
If you're not getting 30 seconds for
you. I don't see any groundswell of public opinion.
You know, we have a rule here, and most people are
finally, starting now, you need to approach your colleagues on the City Council and in the legislature to develop a strategy around a better project, and then go to the governor to get his assistance in forging a new process so that it can come about. If you consider yourself sensitive to current climate and environmental needs, you can't let the project go forward, and you need to actively work to bring about a better alternative. Please don't force the environmental community to take you to court to try to bring about a climate responsible solution
for the rule
that you should have been on the table in the first place.
I'd ask you to stop speaking and to sit down. Thank you. Finally, for sitting down. All right. Can anyone else wish to come forward and speak? Babu, welcome. I'm Mr. Babu
David Pichempo, and speaking as an individual, thank you for staying out tonight. I'm just going to lead with the most important point to me, or the recommendation, which is to urge you to request a deeper analysis of alternative 6A, which is a transit alternative that incorporates projections for different trends of increased transit supply to the 2049 horizon. It also models changes in single occupancy vehicle demand with respect to transit supply. Also, I realize it's late in the game to be pursuing other alternatives, and I share the feelings of the previous public commenter that the request to look at tolling lanes seems essential to understand what alternatives on the table, particularly if we're concerned about BMT and in conjunction with transit. I just want to say, build up 125, 181 million miles BMT. That could be an underestimate based on other figures. UC Davis puts it at 234 million. If I might be wrong, I'm trying to find data for, to put that into context, but that seems like the annual, it looks like the annual miles traveled in vehicle miles traveled in Davis for a year. So that is significant. That's the level of induced demand is significant. And the greenhouse gas impacts that are inferred from that increase in BMT are based on some projections of fuel efficiency improvements and rates of EV adoption that frankly might be quite unrealistic. But even so, if we accept the numbers, Caltrans manages to mitigate less than half of BMT here, and that to me is problematic. And when I requested thinking about alternative 6A and getting a deeper analysis of that, when I look at the report, it seems inconsistent in the attributed BMT impact of that alternative. In some places, it states that it can't be analyzed, but when you look at the technical memo of a fair peer, some of the mitigation measures do have BMT associated with them, and those mitigation measures relate to increased transit. So clearly, analysis can be done about the impact of increased transit on BMT. But more worryingly, as far as I can tell, there's no analysis of what happens, not just when you build a transit lane, but when you build a transit lane and also invest in increased supply of transit. It doesn't make much sense to build a bus lane and then have the same 6-8 buses there that we have now. That, to me, seems like a reasonable comparison. It seems like jurisdictions would face major incentives for funding that increased transit supply, and the $55 million Caltrans is putting out for mitigation. One imagines in a transit-only scenario, a good chunk of that funding, even more than it is now, would go towards increased transit. But that $55 million might not be necessary because the induced BMT would be, in theory, a lot less if we had greater transit, meaning people would be pulled out of cars and onto buses. So, we could most likely mitigate a lot higher fraction than 43% if we could have increased transit supply. So, the larger point is, nowhere in the world ever has freeway widening been a long-term solution to congestion. Nowhere, anywhere. It just doesn't work. It relieves congestion in the short term, and it makes things worse in the long term in terms of BMT and greenhouse gases. So I would say, solutions are clear, public transit and mixed-use zoning. I would urge you to consider taking the first step in the solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Babu. Next speaker.
Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Ken Wagstaff, and I'm a former mayor of Davis and a former member of this board. It is a shame that we're down with such a short time period for the public to consider these options and to make their comments. I'm not familiar with the constraints that you face as you try to build this timetable, so I don't want to be critical about that. But I just want to say that from a common sense standpoint, looking at traffic sitting as it attempts to wind through Davis, mostly just sits there for good chunks of the day, we're getting a lot of air pollution from that in Davis. And it seems to me that that's a consideration. I don't know whether that was all taken into account in terms of the analysis of the air pollution. I'm very surprised to hear some of those figures, given the fact that I think traffic is not just sitting there and generating pollution. It's going to be eased with this project. I tend to favor whatever you can do to get an express lane going between Davis and Sacramento. Most of the people who were present at the workshop that took place at Community Church this week, just this past week, when asked to express their feelings about that, raise their hand in favor and express blessing. There is an odd situation where, you know, traffic narrows, comes from Solano County into Yolo County, narrows down to 3 lanes. Davis carries the brunt of that impact. I think that if there were time to look at other options, there could be enhancing alternatives. Maybe that'd be best, but what we've got is a situation where we might have to give about $85 million back to the feds if we don't figure out a efficient way to use it. We need more express buses. I think I'm very interested in a toll plaza there that would ultimately govern traffic on the bridge. But I think that if you were to effectively implement an express lane for buses and high speed vehicles, 3+, you still have the opportunity in the future to manage this on a tighter basis and manage it for everybody. So I appreciate the courage you have as you go forward here, trying to do something that certainly a lot of environmentally oriented people in Davis just think more cars is a bad thing. Well, more cars are here. They congest at Davis and sit there. So I look forward to this board's action to relieve that congestion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Friends, are there anyone else who wishes to speak tonight? All right. We'll close the public comment.
We have 4 online.
Oh, excuse me. We have online comments. Thank you. Please, identify yourself.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, your name, please.
Yes, I'm Andy Ferrillo. I am a member of the Yolo TD Citizens Advisory Committee, as well as the Davis Bicycling Transportation and Street Safety Commission. I'd like to thank you all for the presentation, and for thank staff for the presentation, and thanks to you all for considering this item this evening. I would like to express my support for Alternative 6, the transit lane alternative, as that is the only option that would guarantee that this project would provide a fast, reliable, and affordable transportation option between Davis and Sacramento that anyone could use. But I would like to recommend a few tweaks to that option that would make it work better for transit. Firstly, I'd like to recommend that the lane's alignment, that it be built where the transit is. Specifically, right now, the current Alternative 6 proposes 5 miles of new transit lane between the 80-50 split and West El Camino Avenue, where there's no existing or proposed transit service, so that lane would just be sitting there empty if the transit lane alternative were chosen. So I'd like to recommend that that be removed from that alternative, as that would save quite a bit of money. And then also, to that end, that the transit lane connector be moved from the 80-50 split, because again, that would be unused by any existing or proposed transit, and moved to the Mace interchange in Davis, which is a chronic point for delays for both Yolo bus getting on the highway, as well as the Unitrans, because Unitrans get stuck in the queues of traffic waiting to get on the highway. Also, one unfortunate reality of the current federal and state funding programs is that new transit service would only be funded directly through this project if a car infrastructure project that induces vehicle miles traveled is built, which is again quite unfortunate. But that doesn't mean that. I'd like to see if the transit lane alternative were chosen. I would like to see you all commit to funding that transit service increase package through existing sources. One great option is the local fund from the Transportation Development Act. That fund often gets diverted to local streets and roads, but was intended, the legislature intends that fund to be used for transit, and it's one of the few sources that can be used for transit operations today and be a great source for a lot of those service increases. And also, regardless of the alternative chosen, an increase to Line 42 needs to be part of the service increase package, the transit service increases that come with this project. Currently, that was excluded from that package, and those numbers just seem off to me. The EIR says that it would cost $16 million per year to have 15-minute peak-hour service on Line 42, compared to just about $800,000 per year for a similar service increase on the Causeway Connection, which is a parallel route, which, again, that just doesn't those numbers just don't seem to add up, so I'd like to ask you to check those calculations. And then in general, just that line 42, it's really the workhorse for transit on this corridor. It goes all through Davis, through West Sacramento. And then last but not least, can I wrap up really quick?
Yeah, quick.
Thank you. And then last but not least, I'd like to ask that, currently biking across the causeway, I've seen, pieces with the current construction going on, I've seen, pieces of car bumpers on the path, pieces of the fence broken or missing. So I'd like to recommend that any MOU for obligating funds for this project come require Caltrans to restore the shoulder for the safety of bike users. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Again, thank you for serving on our advisory committee. So, is there additional public comment?
Yes. We have Christine.
Welcome, Christine.
Welcome. So, my name is Christine Kimball Shoemaker. I'm a retired scientist and a longtime climate activist in Woodland. And for 5.5 years, I was on the CAC for Valley Clean Energy. I served as chair and vice chair during that time. My passion there was focusing on clean electricity. But we can't look at that in isolation, and transportation is key to overall reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I attended the teach-in last week with Ms. Bernstein, Dr. Handy, Dr. Wheeler, and others. And both speakers, Dr. Handy and Dr. Wheeler, emphasized the importance of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and reducing DMT, and to consider alternatives, to break the old carway and look at ways to encourage folks not to drive. It's important to reduce DMT, not just switch to all electric. There are a variety of reasons for this, including embedded carbon in vehicles. But another reason is that as we transition to clean electricity, it is important to use the clean electricity efficiently. So my guess is that a bus with 20 folks on it will use far less electricity than 20 EVs. And at a large scale, it's the clean electricity amount that you have divided by the total load that gives you your percent clean. So you want to keep the denominator lower by using efficiently. But this is not an argument to slow the transition to all electric, just need to use it efficiently. So after thinking about this, and I do thank the researchers from UCD are to be paid attention to, I would prefer not doing it at all and focus on new alternatives, encouraging folks not to drive, changing the car culture. Short of that, the only alternative I would favor is number 6, a new lane for public transit and buses only. If you build it, the buses will come. And I would like to see, if possible, for that also to include tolling, with equity and the number of people in the cars in mind. So I want to thank you, and thank you for taking our comments. This is a major decision. We all have a responsibility to get this right. Infrastructure decisions such as this stay with us for a long time. And we're in for a big fight on climate. And as Mr. Hirsch mentioned, we need to review this in light of climate and the climate plan. Yolo County per se has a very aggressive goal of net negative by 2030. And also, as others have mentioned, since the Swiss release and now, a lot of the public comment has not come in. I really don't think it's the time to make the decision for which lane we want. Anyway, thank you, and onward on climate.
Thank you, Christine, for all your public service. And additional comments?
One last one.
NJ?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes. Okay, thank you. I'll be as brief as I can. So my name is Anne Jane Bondo. I'm the chair of the Yolo County Climate Action Commission, but I'm speaking on my behalf tonight. I would like to thank everyone involved in all the work that has been done, all the research, and also, members of the public. I just want to remind, I think that we are looking at this as an issue in big part because our behavior, human behaviors and public transportation, the fact that right now the way public transportation, the services are being offered is not really meeting the demand. So my hope is that, ideally there will be a huge emphasis on how we're going to improve on that front. But also, as several of my colleagues before mentioned, you know, I understand that anyway, there is an expiration date on the money. If the project absolutely has to move forward, I'll be supporting the option 6. But again, I just want to continue to urge you to, as much as you can, offer, you know, have not just a lane dedicated to buses, but also make sure that the buses are equipped to carry enough bikes on it, as that's a preferred mode of transportation for several people who are willing to take the bike to Sacramento and other places. But again, please, as much as possible in all the decisions you're making, reach out to the cities that are impacted regarding the cap, the impact on the cap, just so that we're able to have a conversation on that. That was a bit missing on my end. And last but not least, again, emphasis once more time on more public transportation services, of course, the renewable energy, but this is sorely needed in our country. I thank you all again for your work. And that's all my comment.
Thank you, NJ. We appreciate comments from the public. While we do ask you respect our time limit for obvious reasons, we will are happy to receive written comments as well. So if there's anything that wasn't said tonight and submitted to us, it'll be circulated to us by our staff. No further comments from the room or online. With that, then we'll close public comment on the issue and proceed for discussion from the board. From which to comment from the board?
I could have a just early clarifying question. Thank you for Caltrans. It's the slide and commented on the slides, not on the EIR, not just in the EIR. But for instance, page 15 of the slide. So the calculations are very easy to follow. And if we could bring that up, that'd be great.
Matthew, yeah, what is the slide title?
Yellow 80 managed lane update EMC mitigation plan.
Page number, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, there we go. So cost to construct and implement is $1.5 million annual cost, and then $7.5 million over 5 years. So I can see there the arithmetic you get from 1.5 to the 7.5. If we go then to the prior slide, slide 15, and I think it's just an error in the slide. The top line there says $4 million annual cost. And then next to it, the cell says $10 million over 20 years. And I would have expected it to say $80 million over 20 years. Multiplying $4 million per year at 5 years, then it says the total says $10 million. So I wonder if it was just intended to be just a 3 year mitigation, like the one below it.
Or it does have a clarification to offer.
Yeah, but it is a little misleading. So the cost to construct and implement is simply just the annual cost of the program. Each contribution is different. Where some programs we would be able to provide a contribution that would cover the entire annual cost, and others would not cover the entire annual cost, and that's the case for this voluntary interproduction as well. So your math is correct that if we were to cover the annual cost of $4 million over the entire 20 years, it would be $80 million, but we won't be covering the entire annual cost. It would be whatever it would be $500,000 on an annual basis. And so the voluntary trip production program would likely try to seek other matching funds to come up with their entire annual program.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. Thanks. A quick follow-up on that. So then, does the annual VMT reduce that number stay the same?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes, Dr. Early.
So I have no idea who else should be addressing. I'll address the room tag in. So on the equity program, I want to make sure I heard right, that we would have an opportunity, if this went through, then we would be digging into what an equity program would look like. I want to kind of get a better sense of the timing on that, because I will tell you in West Sacramento, right, what we've heard was a lot about equity, right? And so I just want to make sure we have an opportunity to really dig into that and address it.
Yeah, great question. So the equity development of the equity program, the Constellation Developer Program, was built into the $2 million grant application that we provided to Stakehogen that was funded. So that work is actually funded. So we will be moving forward with that. That's one of the things that would kind of happen after we get to April. It would be in the same time horizon as developing our toll ordinance, for example. So it's all the work that would happen once we get through this kind of critical environmental review design, and it would really happen kind of concurrently with construction.
And what would this board's role be in that construction of the equity program?
That's a great question. So my thought on that, although I don't think we've really discussed it, would be that actually the new JCA itself, since they are the ones who will be implementing all of the toll ordinance and overseeing all of this, they would actually be the ones who would be overseeing the development of that equity program.
Okay, so it actually wouldn't be this board, but a separate authority that would have been created after them.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I haven't really thought that much about it, because we are the ones who received the grant from So, but given that it would be the toll authority's responsibility to implement the tolling, I would think we would want to do that. They would be the ones we would want to have do that. But frankly, I haven't really thought that far ahead. So, thank you for raising the question.
Is it right?
Okay, so where is the tolling? That's right.
That it would be the toll authority to do that. Yeah, I appreciate Dr. Early's question, because I had noted that part of Brian's presentation. I was curious about the timing of that, but also, obviously, like San Mateo County, they've just done a similar program as well, the express lanes down there, and built and released their sort of their equity program around that. So curious about that. I think also the other question, though, particularly if separate items this evening, the around the tolling authority, but if it were to be created, the first. Obviously the first segment of toll lanes, express lanes, and the region would be in the Yolo County. And so I'm a little worried about thought that the tolling authority might be a future expansion of, sort of express lanes in the region, but at least initially, having a number of individuals, who might not have any connection to Yolo County making decisions on what the equity program should look like. I mean, I think that, and particularly there's two cities, the county too, but two cities in particular, right, that are directly impacted by the project, the close project. So curious about just sort of how, that decision, I guess, legally that ends up having to be the tolling authority, but it feels like, why are folks from other parts of the region making the decisions about what the equity program looks like when the primary factor on the local jurisdiction
in the Yolo County. Can I kind of respond? So, this week we are getting into item 7 here. It's all connected. So, I would say that, this is part of the reason in developing the JCA that we wanted to make sure that we were proposing a structure where Yolo County would retain the majority of the vote while we are the only project. And so I think the good news, at least with the draft that we have, is that's ultimately the one that is adopted, is that that is the case, that Yolo County would essentially have 3 seats. There would be one other seat that would be not from Yolo County, and then one or 2 seats from South Sharon, depending on how that issue gets resolved. In that instance, that is the agreement that goes forward, it would still be majority Yolo.
All right, well, we will get to them. Issue them item number 7 shortly. All right, additional comments on the board?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we have a quick question. Clarification. Can you address the timeline that Roland or public commenters have talked about not doing this tonight? Can you lay out why this is before this evening and what the possibilities are if we need to take this up later?
Yeah, so I want to be really clear that we don't have the power to decide what this project is going to be. That is a Caltrans decision. In our conversations, We thought it was important for us to take advantage of this time when we have the EIR in front of us to offer our feedback to Caltrans on which alternative we think is best. This is the right time to do that right now because Caltrans is soliciting input at this time. And so this is the last board meeting that will happen prior to the close of public comments on the EIR. And then Caltrans will then certify the EIR. We don't know that we will have another opportunity to actually weigh in with Caltrans in a formal way. And so that's why staff has recommended this to take this action tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, another piece I just want to touch on just around this board's ability. When you look at that timeline, it's obviously a tight time, we only run that half again. But where do we weigh in again? Where does this board have the ability, once Caltrans closes their process, to still have an influence on decisions that are being made as the timeline plays out?
Yeah, I mean, as the lead agency, Caltrans ultimately will make the final decision about which alternative they want to move forward. Now, as the recipient of the $86 million infra grant, we do have the opportunity to, this board will have to decide, are we comfortable with this project, and are we then willing to sign an agreement with the federal government and with Caltrans to go ahead and authorize and move those funds forward. There is a theoretical situation that could happen where if Caltrans selected an alternative that this board is not comfortable with, we then could say, hey, we're not comfortable moving this forward. We don't like the alternative that's been chosen, and we're not going to take that action to authorize the use of those $86 million.
Thank you. I just wanted that. Those control timelines to be clear in the comments that we heard this evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Just one other exciting follow-on question is around the issue of the responsible agency. So Caltrans is the lead agency in this regard, but regarding this particular project in this draft environmental impact report, in terms of responsible agency, I mean, the typical process is that responsible agency makes the comment, or comments, but particularly, around, there's a whole range of alternatives, and sort of that is a pretty typical process for, responsible agencies to sort of weigh in, again, as part of the comment process is not completed yet, in terms of members of the public submitting comments to Caltrans for sort of a CDC address, but the sort of responsible agency sort of component of making comments on the first alternative is a pretty typical one. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as a responsible agency, we do have the responsibility, if you will, to make our preferences and feelings known, and that's a good partner too. If we did not tell Caltrans which project alternative we preferred, and then they picked the wrong one, they can't. Then that's on us for not actually going on the record and telling them which project we prefer. So I think we have not only to make our responsibility as a responsible agency, but also as a good partner to make our wishes clear to Caltrans and to go on the record in terms of what we think is best.
Thank you for the discussion. Additional questions or comments?
I'm on the fence.
Okay.
I'm on the fence about a kind of clarifying what we're doing, in the sense that if I was thinking locally and I was from Davis, I would be thinking about commuters from Davis to Sacramento, and my scope would be commuters. But I'm just asking to clarify that. But my scope in my decision making tonight, or when looking at these projects, is people coming off ships in the Bay Area, bringing trucks, transit, goods of various sizes, people going way past Sacramento, past the Bill, in Northern California, I-5, all these other places. So my scope of who I'm concerned with making a decision for isn't specifically just commuters from a small area, but it's all the uses for transportation, for being able to provide a better travel for all those goods and services, not just in there. Is that right?
One of the things that we know about this corridor is that the majority of trips
do not start or end in Millville County. The majority of trips in this corridor are interregional trips. They're people traveling. This is the land bridge between Sacramento and the Bay Area, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw, why are so many people from Sacramento County taking our survey? It's because they travel this corridor even though they don't live in Millville County. I think we do have a responsibility to think about the entire corridor and to think about all the uses of this corridor. Housing prices in the Bay Area have driven many people to live east of the causeway who work west of the causeway, the super commuters who commute 2 to 3 hours each way because they are priced out of the Bay Area and they choose to live in a place where they can afford. In terms of just thinking about who is impacted by this corridor, we do know the data tells us that the majority of people who travel on this corridor do not actually live in Yellow County. So I wouldn't tell you who it's important for you to represent. You represent who you represent, but just in terms of what the data does tell us, this is much bigger than just the illness.
Thank you. That was a good discussion as well. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any additional points you need?
Yes. Can I ask one more? Just to clarify, this is maybe getting a step ahead, but it's just thinking long term. This is federal money, which is the managed land use project. And if the money wasn't accepted, it was returned to the federal government and could be used anywhere. And it wouldn't necessarily be light rail in St. Louis. It could be old-fashioned freeway widening in Minnesota or somewhere else. Is that the right way to say it?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. We've had a robust discussion and time now to determine our action. Is there a motion?
Early move to accept the staff recommendation.
Thank you. Is there a second to Dr. Lee's motion?
I will second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to accept the staff recommendation that we express our preference for option 4A.
Staff is not actually providing a recommendation on whether it's A or B.
Forget the A. All right. We've had a clarification of the motion. Additional questions or comments from anyone? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Thank you for everyone. And we will move on to item 7, discuss the Yolo 8020 authority application and the JPA permission.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I will give the presentation. And I also want to thank our special counsel, Mr. Sherman, for being here tonight. He's been a key author, I would say, of what's in front of you. And so appreciate him being here and want to make sure he's let you know he's available for questions as well. So what we're going to talk about with this agenda item is to provide an update. This is an informational update, not an action item, on the Yolo 80 Management Tolling Authority application and JPA formation. So if we could go to the next slide. So here you see the top line shows you what a typical highway project delivery timeline looks like. You have the planning phase in blue, you have the environmental phase, the design phase, and then the construction phase. That is what a typical highway development project looks like. Tonight, what we're doing, when you add tolling into the mix, is the whole thing gets a lot more complicated. And so the lower arrow shows you all of the different steps that are required if you're going to deliver a toll project. So it includes things like a concept of operations, traffic and revenue study, securing 8194 tolling authority application. All the things in blue are the things that are complete, and all of the orange things, the things that are in orange, are the things that are in progress, and everything that is grayed out are the things that we have not yet started. And I want to emphasize that this is normally like a 5-year process, and we are doing this all of this in, the span of approximately a year. Next slide. So I want to say a little bit about the 8194 tolling authority process. So this is the process by which the California Transportation Commission decides whether or not to grant tolling authority for this project. So there's about a 60-page project, including appendices that has a bunch of technical analysis, and our consultants from WSP Stefano Guarino and Lauren Stafford, who are still online here and available to answer questions. They've been really the lead on developing that application along with support from Caltrans. It has a whole host of predefined sections based on the requirements, and it must be submitted by the entity that is requesting tolling authority, and that's an important point. So the application must be submitted, and then there has to be a public hearing after the application is submitted that is arranged by the CTC staff. It's got to be located near the project, and it has to occur after the application is submitted and prior to the CTC making a decision on that application. And then the CTC itself will get an informational item with a presentation by the applicant, and then they will get an action item with a presentation from CTC staff, where CTC basically says, we reviewed the application and we have a recommendation on whether or not you should approve it. So that's what that process looks like. Next slide. So, a key case of that is it must be the entity that will oversee the tolling that actually submits the application, which then leads to the next question, well, who is that entity going to be? Well, under AB 194, there are three options. The first is that the Regional Transportation Planning Agency, or RTPA, where the project is located, is the tolling authority. In our case, that is STACOG. STACOG is the RTPA for Yolo County. The second option is a joint powers authority with the consent of the RTPA, and the joint powers authority is, by definition, essentially a partnership between multiple agencies. And the third option is Caltrans. Caltrans, under the statute, does have the option of unilaterally becoming a tolling authority, or I should say applying for a tolling authority, although their application, just like everyone else's, would also need to be approved by the California Transportation Commission. So those are the three choices that we have. Next slide. Now, I think it's important to take a step back and remember that while we are the first, we are not the only tolling project that is envisioned for the Sacramento region. So this map actually shows what was adopted as part of the latter MPPSDS in terms of a toll project for the Sacramento region. So everything in blue is a two-lane tolling project. The ones in green are a one-lane tolling project, and then the ones that are in pink are a variable or kind of reversible lane concept. So again, these are what the MPP is envisioning over the course of decades. We are very much the only project that is ready to go, but over the coming years, we expect other projects will be coming along, including probably next one will be I-5 in Sacramento County, which is currently under planning but does not have any funding for construction. So the reason that I bring this up is it's important for us to recognize the regional context for what we're doing here. We are not an island. We are part of a region, and there are other projects following behind. Next slide. And so what that means, what we have been, in the conversations that we've been having for many months with our partners at Caltrans and STACOG and frankly the other counties in the Sacramento region, is to see if we can come up with a regional approach to tolling that both in the early days when we're the only project protects our ability to control our project, but then also would allow that tolling authority to grow over time as other projects in other counties are ready to go. So the proposed approach that you have in your packet would have, initially, it would have two seats from STACOG. One of those would be an at-large seat, like it could be like the STACOG board president. It could be anybody from anywhere in STACOG. And then one would be from Yolo County. Yolo TD, our board, would appoint two seats to that. And then Caltrans TBD, Caltrans has, and I'll let them speak for themselves when we get there. They have requested two seats on the JPA, and that is something that that I think this board, as well as the STACOG board, we all need to decide and discuss and decide together. As future counties are ready to join the tolling authority, the proposal that we have would be that each of those counties would get the same deal Yolo gets. They would, their local transportation agency would appoint two seats, and then the STACOG board would appoint one seat also from that county. So STACOG would always have one at-large, and then they would always have one representative from each county that is running the tolling authority. So it's a bit of a complicated structure, but I think what I like about this is it's a kind of elegant solution that, again, gives us kind of a majority in the early days, but then gives every other county, the same fair shake when they come in. Mm-hmm. Next slide. That's the end of the slide. Okay. So Again, this is an informational item to update you on where we are. After tonight, the next steps for this process, in fact, I have the timeline, but I didn't actually put it in the slide deck. The same timeline that Brian showed you, I won't go back to it, but essentially the key next steps are after tonight, this would come back to the SACOG board and this board for a vote in January. My hope and expectation is between now and then, we'd have an opportunity to have an additional conversation with Caltrans and SACOG to get to some agreement on a proposal that all three agencies are satisfied with regard to Caltrans' role. There's also been some questions that have come up around Sacramento County and its participation that I know SACOG is fielding, and I think will be a part of those conversations as well. So let me pause and see what questions you have.
I'll start off by respectfully saying that whoever comes from Caltrans is going to state the party line, whatever it is. Caltrans, why do we need two people to state the party line?
You know, I heard some of it today.
Pardon me?
You're all the same thing. I heard the same thing today, actually.
Yeah.
I did too.
It's just, you know, I mean, we value staff input. It's unusual when staff actually sits with elected people, and it's not unusual for them to have a vote over to the executioner. So that's what we're used to. And as an elected person, I'm sort of jealous of our sovereignty at having put our eyes out in front of the voters and let them say yes or no. And that's not the case for somebody that comes from an agency. So I'm just being real honest with you that I think one person should be there and be assertive and speak up for Caltrans. And you guys have a lot of ways of being persuasive, but the rest of Mr. Fitzgerald is a whole lot of money. So I'm just being frank about that. So I don't think you need a vote. I don't think you need two of you to do it. So there's my input. Anybody else want to weigh in?
Do we notice?
Do we notice?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, go ahead. So this way. All right. I just wanted to note some of the talking points. I serve on the Transportation Committee for SACOG, and of course, SACOG met today. So that's kind of a double dose of presentations on that. One of the points that Kathleen Hanley, who presented it for SACOG, made, I thought was really important to bring up tonight, and that is that what we're building is a facility for youth. And as a facility for youth, it is a regional asset. And as a regional asset, we should form a JPA to oversee that. It should be have a regional approach in order to oversee that asset. I thought that was really worth mentioning. And then the other one is that I did hear the same kind of parallel comment to what Tom said, that an agency like Caltrans has a formation of being top down, you know, that's how they're scaffolded. And so one representative overall could be the representative of that voice. Just saying that's what I heard. Thank you.
I sit on the Transportation Committee, and then also am the alternate on both actually for the Board of Directors for SACOG as well. And it's interesting that I went into that conversation kind of agnostic, quite frankly, about how trans having but even though Grant is my love buddy here. we bonded over Kumon. but really was convinced regarding the need to because so much of the complexity around the MOUs, around the funding, and the work, the sheer work that we're gonna all need to do in order to make this work, Caltrans is going to be a part of it. That it would be extremely helpful to be dealing not just with staff, but executive level staff. And by having an executive level individual at the table with us, as a voting member at the table with us, that we would have access to that. And Greg, all that stated that, and Greg, I'd love for you to say it again, so my colleagues could hear it too. And so I think that would be extremely helpful as we are working to move things forward that are going to need to be timely. And so, no longer agnostic, but would encourage us to support a Caltrans voting member And what I would also say is agree that I do not see a world in which two Caltrans staff would be voting against each other. And so one absolutely seems reasonable. Two seems like it would be duplicative. So some other things that I want to make sure that sort of holding this seat as a board of director for YTD that I highlight would be I agree that this, especially since it's starting in YOLO, that the body should largely be represented by YOLO members. And that's really, really important to me. There's not a world in which if Sacramento County had a toll that they were working on that I would say, well, you know, you got to get through West Sac in order to go to the Bay Area. Most of your people are coming to the Bay Area, right? There's not a world in which I would say that. And so hopefully the vote that they have represented by State Cause would be enough. And again, for me, as we think about the future, I think we have done a really great job of allowing for as county stays in, that they would stay in to this. And so as you have some skin in the game, right, then you have an ability to come to the table. But outside of that, I don't see a world in which it would make sense for other counties to be weighing in on something that directly impacts our residents and our constituents at this moment in time, particularly as we know we're going to need to move quickly.
Thank you, I too am on the Transportation Committee for State Cause and board member. So this is how I get before I'm tired.
We've
been up and down these conversations a lot over the past few weeks. Just from a timing standpoint, I know this item is informational tonight, and we're obviously not going to take action on it, but we don't meet again until after the State Cause meeting on the 18th. So are we looking for kind of us coalescing around Caltrans, not a number, because I think it would be important and powerful for this board to have some sort of informal, obviously, because it's informational, but something to be able to report back to the next conversations on the 18th.
I would say that I want to be transparent about the fact that it took State Cause and West YOLO TV staff so long to work out our own stuff around YOLO County, majority representation, that we weren't very good partners to Caltrans in giving them an opportunity to weigh in on this draft before it was released to the public. And again, due to time pressure, but also frankly due to the time that we just needed a lot of back and forth between State Cause and YOLO TV. So I don't actually feel like it's fair to ask you to weigh in when we just really have not had the chance to sit down and have that conversation at the staff level. So I guess I would say give us the grace to be good partners by not kind of forcing our hand in one particular direction or another.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you for clarifying that, and I look forward to hearing our colleague down at the end from Caltrans give his speech again. Hearing about him, he talked a lot this morning around where Caltrans was in the question. Just a couple comments. One, thank you, Autumn, and your team and your staff here for your work with State Cause in getting this joint proposal here before us. As I said earlier today, do support having this regional approach to it. I don't think that State Cause should be the tolling authority, and I don't think that Caltrans should be the sole tolling authority. That leaves us to a JTA. In my opinion, there's a lot of benefits to having a JTA to State Cause, to us, and to Caltrans, quite frankly. So I am supportive of moving forward the JTA. I think the structure that is here now is conducive to what we need in getting this up and going, if this progresses the way that we need that JTA. I think having a majority on that board in the beginning is smart. I think the solution that you guys came up with to add that and make it fluid as we see the region continue to grow, and that JTA set up to allow and accommodate that growth in the future totally needs that case. So thank you for all your work on that and for bringing that forward to us here today. Regards to Caltrans, I think we heard a lot in our State Cause meeting this morning, and there were varying views on it. I know there was a meeting after that talked about the same thing. But I do think that there's a benefit in having a representative from Caltrans on that board. They, no matter what that process is, They are going to be outnumbered. They are never going to have the majority, whether they have one or two. I would favor one seat, and that's what I said earlier today. But they don't, we're not giving them the ability to go in and just make wholesale changes. But what we are doing is creating a partnership and collaboration with Caltrans as we progress through this project. I think that is important. We've heard that a lot today in our state club meeting from folks who represent counties or cities who aren't on our list to have any sort of tolling up in Placerville or Eldorado County, right? We're not seeing the possibility of having tolling come that way, but I understand the regional nature of the body of SACOG, what SACOG does, and the importance of not separating and saying, well, you guys go there, we go here, we move forward. They are the owners and operators of the road that we are talking about, and I think it's important for them to have to see the table, and I do think that one seat on that would be appropriate. So with that, I'll yield to my other colleagues who haven't had a chance to speak on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much. Almost everything since then, yeah, now everyone said it, so I'll jump in. I really appreciate the discussion. I do appreciate the discussion thus far. I think a couple quick comments. Just going to the actual draft bylaws, or I guess it's in a, yeah, it's going to be draft bylaws, and page 10 of those, there is a discussion in there. And so I'm assuming just it hasn't been updated recently, but, you know, talk about Caltrans appointing one director, which will be employed Caltrans, and then, of course, the sort of, it's ambiguous around either non-voting or voting director. I've, you know, fortunate to serve on a couple of boards over the years that have had ex officio directors from Caltrans, including this board as well as SACOG. I think that having a voting member from Caltrans, this will be fine. I think that it does help manage the grade level of buy-in. Frankly, that might not honestly exist in the ex officio only board member position. I do, so count me in the category of thinking it's fine to have Caltrans be part of the governing body as a voting member. And then as it relates to the sort of, you know, also stipulations in there regarding non-voting directors and sort of talk about how some of the other agencies, including Eldorado Transportation Plant, Transportation Commission, as well as PCTPA and Sac County, you know, I don't know, there are plans to have regional, more regional sort of express lane facilities built in the years to come. I honestly think it is important to try and get those folks on board in the non-voting thing. I mean, get them engaged, right? And as soon as about later, I mean, I mean, as opposed to like waiting, you know, sort of for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that may be, I think, because, you know, there's already, my understanding, not serving on the SACOG board, is that there's, you know, a lot of unfamiliarity with this sort of tool, a lack of familiarity, and so I think having some of the transportation planning agencies be a part of this from sort of the ground floor, especially, again, in the non-voting capacity, at least initially, but with that anticipation that they are going to sort of take on their tool at some point in the future, actually seems to make sense to have them be a part of the discussions and so they recognize what is really happening. I think it helps to take sort of clear out some of the mystery associated with it. And so just a couple comments there. And then I know you will have sort of this potential action in January for both boards. They're for, I mean, for this board and for SACOG, certainly I know that they've got, the SACOG board's got a meeting scheduled on this, but are we, who's to go first? I mean, is there any sort of, does that matter in timing and such? And just curious about that.
Yeah, good question. And thanks, and also thank you for the comment on the non-voting seats. I actually do think that's extremely important, in part because as the first polling, first polling process, we're going to be entering long-term contracts around things like who's going to do our customer service, who's going to do our back office. You know, these are all long-term contracts that others who want to join will be locked into. And so having the opportunity for them to weigh in on those will, I think, help it make it easier so that when the time comes for them to join, they feel confident in the decisions that we have made. So I just wanted to appreciate your comment there and wanted to build on that. Oh my gosh, it's been so long.
This is a keeper thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So yes, in January, the SACOG board will go first. Their meeting is on January 18th, and then our meeting is on the 23rd, I believe.
And they also just, they decided today that they were also going to try convening many of their transportation committee in January 4th, which was not previously on the schedule. And similarly, I think we will try to have a meeting of our ad hoc committee, which is currently scheduled for January 1st. We're not going to do it that day. But I do think we will also want to have that committee have an opportunity to meet as well prior to this coming to either the State Hub or our course.
Thanks so much for that. The other one last quick comment, which is just it goes back to the issue and the discussion we had earlier regarding the equity plan.
Yep.
I think it also lends itself to either raise or non-voting directors. Like, you know, if folks are engaged from the get-go in the non-voting capacity, with it, of course, the intent over time that there is going to be expansion in the region, I think it makes it also somewhat easier for sort of, again, just the to make sure people are really at the speed of what is occurring around that. Because what I can see, unfortunately, happening is, you know, initial partners are at the table and helping to develop an equity plan, and then, you know, two or three new members come in some number of years down the road and say, well, we didn't have anything to do with this. We don't, like, you know, have sort of, I mean, it could manifest itself in a variety of ways, certainly including the equity plan, but also in a variety of other ways. And I just think, you know, there's, you run the risk of newer, also bigger partners, thinking that there's a need for, you know, sort of upending the apple cart after something's been in operation for a number of years and working successfully.
Just the only thing I, again, because you heard earlier, I know that you all have actually been very actively chatting with, consulting with PC, I'm hoping I'm going to get all these acronyms right, PCA. I think it's great to respond to Director Ferris on that as well. You have been actively consulting with these folks.
Yeah, we have. We pulled together what we've been calling our regional toll policy working group. I think the first meeting was in May, possibly April, and this meeting has been meeting monthly. We did pause for a few months when there was a lot of uncertainty around the EIR and what was happening. But yeah, I would say that it's probably met 7 times over the last 9 or 10 months, and they have been, and they also did receive drafts of this at the staff level before it was publicly released and had the opportunity to
Okay. Well, I think we've had an outstanding discussion. We are still going to get Greg a chance here in the next time. I just want to say, I agree with you, realize how variable our views are. There's a lot in common here, and I do feel the common ground will be found, and I do think Paula's made a reasonable request about this. We've taken no specific action, but let staff continue to work with the other parties in defining something that works. Time is of the essence. And so I just want to know, I'm flexible, actually. I think it'd be nice if you accept the vote and have one person cast it. And that would be a sweet spot for me. Go ahead, Greg.
Go ahead.
First off, I do appreciate the YTD team for taking the time for as well. We got our hands full with the project. We got our hands full with the option of Caltrans being the lead may have crossed our minds, but, you know, this is a regional process, and I think we're all great agencies, and we can all work together to get this done. We would be the delivery arm of the JCA. And I am speaking for all of Caltrans here, so I do have that authority. I will say in District 3 last year and the year before, for a total of about $1 billion, we delivered about 40 projects. So we can do that, and I think you all know we can do that. But also the traffic operations on the JCA. It just made sense to us as we were working with the team that a 2+2+2, which has now turned into 2+2+ every once in a while, be three here. That's the math. Director Chapman, you know, chatter a little bit at the board meeting there. We'll always be a little bit behind. But it made sense to us as an organization that we'd have to go. I appreciate the continuing conversation. I do enjoy the perspectives of everybody. Thanking those who gave us a vote. instead of ex officio, what I told the State Hub board this morning was, you know, this is brand new. It doesn't have to be what we've always done. You guys are an ex officio. It will be somewhat at the highest level in the department. I am looking forward to it. I mean, this is New Jersey for all of us, and it'll be successful.
I really appreciate that. Again, though, you know, we all disagree with each other. With if Dineska and you were the two guys with Dineska, and we get you ever. What I'm saying is, if you had an underling with you as a second person, would that person feel free to disagree with you? Well, we feel free to disagree with each other.
It would be too higher level, or it would be the highest level. Would that start from District 3? It could be from headquarters.
Craig, thank
you very much for the opportunity to come.
We're glad to have you, and we're always glad to have Alfred Francis Dacon, too, who always listens to what is shared. Thank you. Now, it's time for public comment on this issue. Does any member of the public want to speak tonight? Come on up, Alan. Get another 3 minutes.
Thank you.
We need to.
I'll keep a little. There's a solid yellow double line. First, I don't know how much money this committee will actually have to spend on private equity. How much they can sell, because a lot of the money is already committed to mitigation. It's not clear. I thought the early money was $6 to $8 million, not $10 million, so what is anticipated. Maybe we'll hit the jackpot like in Washington, D.C., where we got $40 fault toll for the advantage rights, which is what, the $40 toll. Look it up. Washington, D.C., advantage rights, $40 toll sometimes. Yes. Something 60 at the worst. Enforcement. I think enforcement is really critical. Look at HOV 3. There's no automated way of enforcing 3 plus. There's an honor system. I think you should have a CHIP member, at least ex officio on your board, because enforcement is really critical. You know what? The HOV lanes, there has been no enforcement. We have 50% scofflaws on the HOV lanes. I think you should make enforcement part of it. If you're really serious about 3 plus, please consider putting a CHP person on the board, because enforcement, you don't forget that. I'm of the first belief that no taxation without representation. And I think only elected people should vote on tolls and taxes and things like that. So I have a problem with a bureaucrat with tenure to be on the board. So I would suggest an ex-official member. Caltrans is more appropriate than a voting member. You're going to set tolls and things like that. I think that's more appropriate for our democracy. I think Caltrans has plenty of power and an ex-official member. And also with the observation that I know Caltrans is on this board, but many, many meetings we talk about I-80 and Caltrans has said nothing. So I don't know, it's not transparent to me as a member of the public sitting in meetings with Caltrans bad. They don't talk very much in a lot of meetings. No offense, but you guys have not been very communicated what's going on. And finally, this is from Richardson Pearson and Wishwatson Pearson, which is the handbook that the State of City Council has about how to best fit the Brown Act. And this is what it says about ad hoc committees, like your the ad hoc full committee. It says basically an ad hoc committee provides committees are can be required to provide provided these committees do not have a continuing subject matter jurisdiction. The first thing for is a continuing matter of justice, and the toll policy is clearly a continuing matter. Continuing. You have a grant for toll policy, that just continue on. You have a joint powers board, that's continuing, it's just a continuing matter. Your ad hoc committee is not legal. It cannot meet secretly. It's not an ad hoc committee. It is a standing committee. And I suggest your January meeting needs to be publicly noticed under the Brown Act and made public. I would like to consider it tonight. Otherwise, I will make an issue of it publicly because I think it's not appropriate that members of the board should be involved in a secret meeting on such an important matter that it involves millions of dollars. And also suggest you're really democratic. Maybe you should have representatives from Solano County on the board too, because they're probably going to pay a lot of the tolls because 90% of people on that call here are not from Kansas, but they're from outside of Sacramento County and Solano County. Maybe that's hard, but you always have to tax people from our. Tax 4 is living overseas, taxing someone in Solano County Control is very good, so I maybe want to consider that, but please put a CHP member on, and please stop meeting the secret. Thank you very much.
Alan, I do believe this ad hoc committee is only in existence until the establishment of the CPA, then it expires.
You cannot form it. it's a continuing subject matter is a test. Continuing subject matter is a continuing subject matter.
The subject matter is to create the JPA and then it's dissolved. Somebody do wish to weigh in on that.
We'll certainly take a look at it. As my understanding is the short list that committee was formed for the brief requirement later to the establishment of the JPA, and so it's not a long term issue, and so that it's appropriate for an ad hoc. But I will certainly take a look at it.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak on this issue? All right, our robust discussion is concluding. Thank you, everybody, for what you put up to share with us tonight. So, item 8, and I know you're all probably losing enthusiasm for continuing the meeting, but item 8 is on the agenda at my request because I received a notice from the CPA that I had this kind of indicate bounds of action with actions taken by our district to ensure that we are operating in appropriate financial standards. So why don't you give us a very quick summary of what kind of financial controls are in place to protect our district from any kind of adverse use of our or inappropriate use of our finances.
So good evening. I'm Chastity Grigo, the Director of Finance and Administration. So I want to thank you for allowing us to address the auditor's request about the fiscal year 22-23 annual financial report, which is currently in progress. I do have a brief presentation for you. I timed it to about 8.5 minutes, so if you guys can hang on until then, we can go through that, unless you just want a brief overview.
Go ahead and share your slides. We appreciate brevity, though.
All right.
We're not brief.
So, I'll look at a few key aspects of Yolo Tumi's internal control environment, focusing on our objectives, recently updated policies, and then compliance initiatives. I'll also provide an update on specific actions that we took to address the audit findings for the internal control assessment for the fiscal year 21-22, so last year's report. Next slide, please. So our internal control objectives serve as our operations guiding principles. And at the core, we understand our responsibility in allocating resources for transportation and multimodal needs across all of the communities that we serve. We recognize the significance of prudence, oversight, and the risk reduction in managing diverse funding sources and providing services to the public. So safeguarding our environment against fraud and errors requires a proactive approach, which is achieved through strategic design of our control environment, implementation, and ongoing training of staff. And given the multitude of funding sources, navigating through federal, state, and local regulations, and internal policy, this remains a constant focus for our staff. So ongoing reviews of our policies, our guidelines, and training aims to meet compliance standards, ensuring that we are operating within the framework that governs us. And then our controls include how we defend against risk, not just financially, but also for our physical assets and the data that is managed through our IT system. And then we also recognize that as a public agency, transparency is non-negotiable. So simplifying complexity, providing clear reports, and facilitating so audits are not just objectives, they are principles that guide and dictate our interactions with the public and our partner and agencies. And then lastly, maintaining public trust. So having a thorough, transparent management and protection of public resources is an important factor for us. And as you are aware, Yolo Tumi stays actively engaged in communicating with our communities and providing timely, relevant, and understandable, hopefully, information to our board, our advisory committee, and within our ad hoc committee. So these core objectives really serve as backbone to our control framework. They are effective if we have leadership commitment, clear policies, effective training, regular monitoring, and an overall awareness of the impact of noncompliance. Next slide, Heather. So ongoing compliance checks over the past 2 years, as you know, the district has experienced a significant staff turnover, mainly in the management role. As of December 2021, Leo Levinson took on the role as interim CFO, leading a comprehensive review of policies and updates as well. And as part of that proactive strategy, several operational and procedural changes were initiated, including the implementation of a new financial system and payroll application. So this goal was to align current regulations and also leverage advanced technology to enhance our controls, generate timelier reports, and improve our overall efficiency. So despite the challenges posed by many of the past staff transitions, the finance team worked diligently to implement these changes in addition to undergoing significant training within areas of our department. So just for a little insight, before I applied for this position, I dove into many of these board agenda items, the minutes, as well as the financial information that was available on the website. I was encouraged.
Are you glad you took the job?
So that encouraged me that policies were being reviewed and that they were being updated and in concert with implementation of a new financial system and payroll system. So those two things needed to go in line. What it also indicated to me was that ULTD places a high priority on maintaining a strong control environment. That's also very important as a finance officer, a government finance officer. So what it also signaled to me is that the new system would be designed in a way that would address any of the updates that were made to our policies and practices. So here's this list that you've been looking at for the last 2 minutes are the amended policies that were brought to the board with a significant relevance being in the financial internal control. And although finance spearheaded the changes of these policies, it is the responsibility of all district staff to review it, to understand it, to promote it, and to comply with them. So in 3 months that I've been here, I have consulted these policies in addition to quite a few others to address any questions that have come up or anything that we've been unsure of. Next slide, please. So this brings us to the independent auditor's internal control assessment. This is something that is issued annually after we complete our annual audit. So the auditors play a pivotal role in ensuring financial accountability and transparency to of our public agencies. So ULTD is subject to an annual financial audit covering Transportation Development Act, local transportation funds, state transportation funds, and federal single audits. So this involves a comprehensive examination of our financial transactions, validation of legal compliance, testing our safeguards, and addressing any potential fraud or misleadness. And so the findings that come from this report are really recommendations in how we can continuously improve in governance and our overall operational practice. So for the fiscal year 21-22, this is a report that the board has previously seen earlier this year when Mr. Levinson presented the financial statements. We had one audit finding as a result, with the discrepancy being in grant expense allocation. What occurred was that there was different denominators that were used in calculating fair revenue, which went undetected by the controls that we had in place at the time, leading to an overclaim of $12,268, which impacted our reimbursement calculation. So in response to that one audit finding, we implemented additional staff training, which continues to happen currently. We clarified on procedures, and we redesigned some of our calculation worksheets to ensure accuracy. We also have more communication with our grant agencies to address any of the concerns that we have, in addition to seeking guidance about eligible federal expenses before submitting claims. So basically, the auditor's assessment, as I mentioned, is issued each year, and it basically reinforces the reliability of our financial information, and underscores our commitment to not just detecting fraud, but not fraud, but risk and fraud, and avoiding it as well. So for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2023, as I mentioned, that audit is currently underway. We are expecting the next auditor's assessment to be issued sometime in January, and we'll return to the board with all of the reports at that time. So key takeaways here, we are reviewing policies. We have submitted updates, various updates to the board for review. We're continuing our monitoring and enforcement. We have implemented improvements for the audit findings that was from the 21-22 annual audit. Currently, the 22-23 is in progress, which is expected to be brought back to the board in sometime January or February. And then as a request of the board, we will now move forward in reporting the status of our internal controls on a semi-annual basis, unless you specify otherwise.
Well, thank you very much. And let me state on behalf of my colleagues and myself how grateful we are to have you as part of our team.
Thank you.
It's not easy to hire people to do what you do. Mm-hmm. You're high demand among many agencies. So thank you for choosing what you do.
Yeah.
And, we could have put this on consent. We talked about it, but I wanted it on the record that we have a fiduciary obligation as board members, and I wanted it on the record that we're paying attention. And I think stay with several animals that we feel the need for less frequent, more frequent, we can talk later.
Cool.
But it's better to be in good shape than bad shape, because once you're in bad shape, you're usually in really bad shape.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be there.
I agree. And we bring these annual statements to you annually. So, did you ask midway?
Sure. I do have to take a quick question on
please, Dr. Rose.
I'm just curious, the auditors that we use, how often do you switch out?
That's a very good question. That actually was one of the questions that I wondered when I was researching, because we have had this in for quite a long time. As far as I can go back.
Yeah, so it was a very interesting mystery that we unraveled, and I'm so grateful that Chad asked the question, because we have a very unusual arrangement in that the contract with Richardson has been controlled by Statog. Dating back for so many years that we don't have any record of when we agreed to them.
Oh, is it like an evergreen contract?
Absolutely.
So we had some conversations with Statog staff and let them know that we will be separating that and having our own, going out to bid for our own independent auditors next year.
Okay, so we've been with this one for a little over, as far as going back, so maybe 20 years. And then moving forward, so after this audit that we get in January, we will take it to bid. That is what we are discussing about. When we talked with Statog, the agreement for them to conduct the annual audit was really more focused on the test, the key rule. And so this came in concert with also doing the annual financial audit work for the district, so these are two different engagements. And so we are in discussion about doing an RFP for audit for that
system. The last thing I would say on this is just best practices, financial best practices, which hopefully we all know, but just in case we don't, right, would be 3 to 5 years, right, yeah. 5 being a max of when you would switch up, and you can get into a lot of trouble, right, just sticking with the same. And so whether they cost us like, no, we should be doing it, hopefully they're switching out who's honest then. But you don't have to comment on that. But if they're not,
you should request it as a board member.
There you go.
It's best practice to do at least an RFP every 5 years. Doesn't mean that they won't, become our auditors again. But yeah, that was one of the questions that I asked the board of
mine. Additional comments or questions? Members of the public? Alan, do you
trust
us?
Yes.
Thank you.
I know a little bit about it because I was in PA once. This is really important. Thank you very much. I've watched this board for a while, and I noticed the early retirement of the last executive director, and I wondered why that happened, and I wondered if it was financially related. and I wanted to do a financial control. So I'm now really sure this is not going to be the problem, and I'm sure that's fine. But I've got things to be confident. When something happens, you guys will recover. I don't know. And this is quite uncomfortable. The second thing, I want to tell you a story. I want the financial, I want control to also not just monitor the money, but also monitor the operational numbers and make sure they're not being funded. My first job on business school was with a newspaper. And I was in the circulation department. I noticed there was this big room with tons and tons of newsprint. And the truth is that the circulation department was hiding their circulation drops by overprinting the newspapers, stuffing the new single copy mailboxes and taking them back to control. And they only reported to the publisher how many they printed, not how many were actually sold. Because there was no audit control about what was happening under the Trump. So I hope that the controls, which are really important, also monitor and control the operation, the ridership numbers, the accuracy of those. There was a transit agency in San Diego County where the marketing director stole $200,000 worth of cash receipts. It was pretty egregious from the didn't support people. So the operational numbers are really important, and I'm glad this is the appropriation. And Tom, thank you very much. This is really important. Thank you for bringing this up. It's very important to put on the agenda.
Thank you, Alan. All right. Thank you. I think we're done, aren't we? And thank you, and we'll look forward to continuing the stay abreast. I'm one of those people where I don't always get everything the first time I hear it. I need to hear repetition. So regular review isn't a bad idea, given the weight of our responsibility. Mm-hmm. All right, so item 9 is administrative reports. Board member verbal report on my right. Anybody?
Okay.
You're good? Okay. On my left. Caltrans, want to say anything?
Yes.
All right. You were asked. All right. So no board member report. Transdev, is someone going to report for them tonight?
I don't believe so. No.
The news is all good as far as we know, huh? Okay, maybe not.
I don't have anything to report.
All right,
nothing to say. So.
All right. So that brings us to our second record for the report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, how lucky are we to have our wonderful new director of finance? We are so thrilled to have her on board. This is the first time she's presented here.
She said yes.
No kidding. So glad she said yes. So we're thrilled to have her. As you can see, and I don't know if you noticed, one of the things in the consent calendar was also the first quarter financial report. And I can say it is an amazing improvement over the way we previously reported for the first quarter. Take a look if you haven't already. Alan, take a look. Moving on. One of the other things that was on your consent calendar was the chair rotation. And so at our next...
Now you didn't do justice. I was going to talk about that.
I couldn't miss an opportunity, but to thank our current chair, Tom Spock. This is his last meeting, and I you know, I can say the chair.
Chair.
In my second year in this role, and very, just want to appreciate Tom for his leadership this year. It's been a year, I would say, where for as many things as we were driving forward ourselves, we were also responding to things that were coming our way, a lot of unexpected hits, and I just really appreciated his flexibility in dealing with all of the crazy things that came out of left field this year. Very much looking forward to welcoming our new chair, Director Chapman from Davis, and our new vice chair, Director Early.
What? Who decided that?
Our new team. We'll have a team of our new board members leading in the leadership role. We look forward to seeing what they do with it. A couple other things. Those of you that are on the SACOG board know, today the SACOG board approved an SB-125. This is a new transit funding request of $500,000 to EOOTD to update our short range transit plan. That's something we're very excited about. Part of that allocation. This is the bailout money that the governor passed as part of the budget this year for transit. We hope there'll be more money to come, but we were included in the initial allocation for $500,000. We're very happy about that. I have other things, but I've been a long meeting, so I will just say
this weekend, staff participated in the Woodland Holiday Parade with our feline vehicle.
Yay.
And I've got a sinus infection, I've been recovering, so I was not out there, but I heard great things, I saw photos, and I just really want to thank the team. It has been a crazy month for the YOLO TV staff, everybody's working extremely hard, and yet to see the enthusiasm, you know, getting out there at the parade. We have a remarkable team, and I just really want to acknowledge them for that. And I'm glad some of you were there and saw that. So that concludes my report. If there's no questions on that, I will go to the long range calendar.
Go to the long range calendar.
All right.
No ad hoc committee reports, I presume.
No.
Such as they are, right.
So in January, you will have, of course, YOLO 80 Managed Lane update and possible actions, probably multiple actions. As you heard about, we'll, of course, have action on the JTA agreement, as well as some of the MOUs that we will have for implementing some of the VMT mitigation strategies. So keep an eye out for that. We hope to provide an update on some of our transit planning activities, including the SRTP that we just got funding from SACOG for. Report and possible action on the Woodland Transit Center relocation, and potentially our audited financials. But if you heard from Chad, that may start in February. We'll see how quickly the auditors get it to us. And then in February, we may have yet another action on the new claims. This is just going to be a recurring thing. We'll see what that might be. And then we'll be coming back to you around our updates to ADA policy rider information. That was something we had as an informational item several months ago, and we think that will be ready for your action in February. And then it's time to start thinking about our budget and work plan for the next fiscal year. So we will be giving you an overview of what that process looks like. We'll see if we get to all of this. So definitely want to make sure we get our 3-month status report on the V-Line in Woodlands, which started in late October. So checking in on the progress and how that's going, and also potential expansion of that service into the town of Woodlands. So lots of items to come, lots of exciting things to come.
Bye, Jen. Okay, I'm going to take us out here, and I'm just going to say, what, could you do my comment?
Yes, I have a question.
Ask your question.
From what I understand, the last fight this board has on the I-80 project is the FHAW term sheet. When will that be on the agenda so the board has a chance to take the funding by that?
Yeah.
Okay,
good question.
Yeah, Brian's presentation earlier listed that it's February. I'm not sure that we'll get to it in February. I think that is a TBD, but then it will be sometime in the next few months, and that will be the final bite of the apple. But we want to make sure that happens after the project, preferred product is selected and the EIR is certified. Those are steps that need to happen before we can present that term sheet.
Thank you. All right. So I just basically for, you know, Director Warren and Director Burke, Barracks and myself were here 2 years ago, and you could have seen how we act, how we functioned 2 years ago compared to what happened here tonight. It's really like night and day, and I can only just say, Autumn, you really have delivered for us in so many amazing ways. We're so grateful to have you, and the maturity and your background and experience has just revolutionized our operation here, and not only are we a transportation district, but you've taken on this project responsibility, which is immense. And it's not going to let up for a while. So I just want to say thank you, Sherry, for doing that, and to all the staff. But Brian, we appreciate you tonight. We appreciate all your colleagues. Obviously, we've already said what we think about you, best, and I'm so happy to have you. So much for the staff. They're just tremendous. But I also want to congratulate Josh and Dante. They're going to take us even higher and better places in the year to come, I have no doubt.
No pressure.
And beyond that, I just wish everybody a happy holiday season. You know, it is Christmas, Hanukkah, all this good thing. So let's all make sure we take time to enjoy our loved ones and friendships and all the rest. And so on January 22nd of 2024, we had the long week this 2023, but sorry, 2024. And Dante show. So with that, friends, any last words from anybody else? Nope.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.